Good evening, and welcome to Release Your Wings. I'm Dan Bagley, and tonight I'm interviewing once again Shireen Chadha. Good evening, Shireen.
Good evening, Dan.
How are you tonight?
Wonderful.
Good. We are discussing tonight the topic of getting out of the cage. So in anticipating this, it reminded me of a story that a management consultant friend told me many years ago. He had gone to the St. Louis Zoo when they had taken the animals out of the small cages and put them into a natural habitat environment. When he went by the polar bear's area, instead of roaming in the cave and swimming, the polar bear was just walking back and forth in about a 14-foot path. This stuck in his mind, and he checked back a couple times during the day, and before he left, about 4 hours later, he stopped a zookeeper and said, "I gotta know what's wrong with your bear." The guy said, "I don't think anything's wrong, but what do you mean?" He said, "He has all that possible freedom, but he hasn't left that one small path." The zookeeper laughed and said, "Nothing is wrong with the bear. He was born and raised in captivity. We've only had him out of his cage a short amount of time. He simply has the small cage habit." Now, within the cages, it occurs to me that the bear thought he was going as far as he could go.
Right.
I suspect that's where you want to go with this.
Right. Actually, that story reminded me of another story about an animal, and which actually is a slightly different, but maybe this will help our listeners. There was a king one time, long time ago, before computers, Facebook and iPad and iPods and all of those things, and he was traveling incognito. He was going to go somewhere incognito in his kingdom to just see how the kingdom was doing, and at that time apparently kings used to do that. But anyway, he had in his palace, it was a beautiful palace, and there was a beautiful room with beautiful windows, and in that palace was his most prized possession. And his prized possession was a parrot.
Uh-huh.
And the parrot was in this golden cage, and he had a beautiful goblet to drink water from, and he had a really nice, beautiful plate studded with diamonds and gold to eat from. But the parrot was very unhappy. But he was the king's most prized possession. And so the king went by the parrot to say bye, because he was traveling. And the king said to the parrot, "I'm going to that part of the kingdom where your family lives. Do you have a message for them?" And the parrot didn't know how to say this, but he said, "You know, I have everything I need, but I really long to be with them." And so the king travels there, and he goes to this forest where the parrot, all of the family of the family lives, and he goes to the head of the family and he tells the parrot that "I have a message from one of your family members." And so the head of the family hears what he has to say, and the king says, "Oh, he has everything, but he misses you." And the head of the family understands in his heart what happened, and he shivers and he falls down dead. And everyone else on the tree, all of the other parrots, shiver and fall down dead. And so the king is really perplexed, and he goes back to the palace, goes back to his prized possession, and he tells the parrot, "What kind of a message was that? Because every one of your family members shivered and fell dead." And so the parrot understands in her heart what happened, and she shivers and falls down dead. The king gets heartbroken. Remember, it was most prized possession. And so three servants come on a golden platter, put the parrot on the platter, take it out to be buried. And then, as soon as the parrot is outside, he flies off.
So he was faking it.
Yes, he was faking it. And so he goes on to the highest branch of the highest tree, and the king goes near the parrot, and he demands to be told, "Why did you do that?" And the parrot says, "Freedom is my duty."
Ah, so now we have two stories. One of them is the animals being ignorant that there is more freedom, and the other is that freedom is our duty to find.
It is our duty. And also, in that story, I like the way the family tricks the king. And also, one of the things I feel is not only it tricks the king, but it's not like the parrot was waiting there thinking, "Oh, what can I do?" it understood what it had to do and did it himself or herself. Did it herself. The parrot was a sheep.
Right.
Did it herself. And so in the same way, we have to understand what we have to do and really do it ourselves. And it's, and for me, the basic thing is it's our duty.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about how we know we're free or not free. For this duty is, I mean, that's a pretty, freedom's an abstract term, unless you just go straight to the song, for freedom is another word for nothing left to lose. But how do we get there, and how do we know if we're free or not free?
I feel that if you're experiencing sorrow, mm-hmm. if you're experiencing any kind of desires, mm-hmm. or if you're experiencing things like, I deserve,
uh-huh.
you know, why not this or why that?
Got it.
If you're experiencing any of those things, then we know we are not free.
So, in a
way. Or if you want other people to change.
Yeah. So, our attachments, or which may show up as addictions, if I don't get my own way, if they don't think I'm right, then I'm unhappy. If I don't get the new car, I'm unhappy. Those are cages.
They are cages. And also, I feel body consciousness, or just the label that I am a body, or I am a female, this is my age, this is my nationality. Those are also cages. But mine and this whole concept of I deserve, I want, all of those are cages too.
So even if we are desiring for other people to think we're wonderful, that's a huge cage. Because
it's a very big cage. There's something about, in the Brahma Kumaris, we have a concept called dying alive.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, for me, it's not dying alive. The concept is called dying alive, but it's actually truly living. In that, I become free from wasteful thinking, and my pure feelings and my good wishes transform everything. Yeah. Actually, if I say something and people are not doing it, then I feel that there should be transformation in my feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And that transformation in my feelings comes from when I really sit in my original state of being, and then my feelings transform behind the words. And also, more than anything, I feel we shouldn't even think about transforming anything else. That I should be first in that. And I feel that is what we call truly living, even though dying alive.
Right.
But that is what is our duty. It's our duty to really transform so that the world can transform.
So what I hear you saying is you're really talking about what dies is the artificial self, that ego structure that says without my tie, I'm not appropriate, or without my jewelry, or without whatever.
Right, or without anything to do with the body. Yes.
Which means every time we are focused on externals to validate ourselves, we might be in a golden cage, but it is a cage.
It is a cage. And I feel like the unhappiness tells us that we are in a cage. And the other aspect of it, I feel, is we have to treat the mind with a lot of love and with a lot of care.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't, then the mind actually can get into a lot of trouble. Actually, we can. And so what happens is, if I don't treat my mind with love and respect, the way what I'm thinking, if I'm thinking negative about someone, I'm not treating my mind right. It mm-hmm. doesn't have anything to do with the other person. I'm not treating my mind right. And when I'm not treating my mind right, I feel the mind tends to go into cages.
Sure, because it traps you in, I can't be happy until they change.
Right,
or this
situation changes. Exactly.
Yeah.
And most of the time, 99.9% of the time, we create a web and then we get trapped in that web.
Yeah. Well, we do that with our own thinking very often, because one way I've been reflecting lately on how the mind works is very much like the ocean. And if there's turbulence, if you go deep enough beyond the surface desires, the surface dramas, it's always calm in the ocean deep enough.
Right.
And we, like the ocean, can have this snarl of drama happening around us. We can turn on the news and it looks awful, you know, for 22 minutes till the next news segment comes on. But down deep inside, we can get to that place of calm, I suspect.
Yes, yes. And that happens with treating our mind with respect and love. And that's what I mean by respect and love. Just like if I, let's say if I have, I'm a guest in someone's house and I go there and I have respect for them, I'm not going to take junk and put junk in there. In the same way, I shouldn't put junk, even if it's even if I feel it's valid. Mm-hmm. I feel that's what is the illusion that tells us, no, this is valid, but no. The point is not if it's valid. The point is not that someone else is behaving or the situation is bad or this or this. The point is that we have to reframe our reference and think, is this respectful to my mind? Am I being loving to my mind? Because the mind is what traps us in these cages.
So the way to know whether or not we're free is we have to, in a funny way, pay attention to how we feel. Pay attention to what our bodies are telling us at
yes.
any given...
Right. How we feel, definitely. And also, one of the things is when I was talking about this parrot dying in
yes.
a cage, I feel also it denotes this dying alive, or this denotes this true freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I have this dying alive, which is really true freedom, then I'm really truly living. But the only way to attain freedom is to die alive.
So one of the other things in this dying alive story is it occurs to me that the parrot indeed had everything of luxury. I mean, it had the diamond-studded goblets and gold and all of this, but it still wasn't sufficient to give up its freedom.
Yeah, so and also it had someone, she had someone who really cared about her, the king.
Aha.
But its original nature was freedom.
So in a funny way, this is close to self-actualization in Abraham Maslow's terms, because what he would say self-actualization is one of his definitions was living beyond the good expectations of others. In other words, I have to be this way because my family tells me to, or my people expect, my tribe, my flock expects me to be that way, and I need it to validate that I'm a good person. In a funny way, you can be a good person without striving for the good person label.
Yeah, you know, I feel freedom is to be in our truest sense.
Uh-huh.
Or that part of us that is just so... You know, it's interesting about morality or about expectation. Usually, the society expects me to be, it's like a moral code.
Yeah.
It's important to live by a moral code. But I feel the moral code happens automatically if I live a spiritual code.
It's a byproduct.
Yes. And so I will live that, but not to just focus on living because other people are expecting me, but if I live in my true essential being, then automatically everything else falls into place.
In a similar fashion, I can't remember the reference, but it was somebody quoting one of the Dead Sea Scrolls things in the interpretation of the Ten Commandments. And this interpretation of that was not thou shalt not so much. It was if you would know God, you would not kill. If you would know God, you would not steal. If you would know God, you would honor your father and your mother. And in that sense, that's what you're saying.
Why did they change it? That's so much better.
Well, in a funny way, it is saying that if you really get, if you're free, then it isn't just you shouldn't do this to do it, because that makes it a moral landmark that you have to touch, at least pretend you're touching that stone, if not actually touching it. But it is that's what I hear you saying, that it isn't so much I have these things I can't do, it is when I am in my very best self, it's what I choose to do or not to do.
It's our duty. Freedom is my duty. It's not something, oh, it's a good thing to do.
Yeah.
I feel all of us are in a position of understanding our own greatness.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't help to play small. To acknowledge that greatness and understand that it is my duty to live that way.
So within our duty to live that way, are there any steps we need to take, a small step in that direction? Getting quiet, I would imagine, is one.
I would say to be very respectful and loving to the mind.
Aha. Uh-huh. And that means to be nice to yourself, not scolding yourself, not fussing at yourself.
Or anyone else.
Or anyone else. And tending to nourish it with the good thoughts,
yes,
rather than...
Yes, yes, especially spiritual knowledge.
Spiritual knowledge would be it.
Yeah.
And if we can give one more plug for meditation, if it's always peaceful, the deeper we go below the surface of the waves and drama on the top, then probably some amount of time spent in the quiet contemplation. Good. That's a nice wrap-up, and I hope you're feeling a little more likely to be free, as I am from talking to you this evening. Thanks, Shereen.
Thank you, Dan.
Good evening.